Okay. Yes, to take the first few paragraphs as read. First thing I'd like to just emphasise is that this submission is on behalf of the Big Bay Whitebatters Group. No other Whitebatters are represented by myself. But I would like to just say that I have spoken to Andrew Bomar of the Martins Bay. He's got a place in Martins Bay, and the issues in Martins Bay are almost identical to those in Big Bay. So I'd like to say that if you're looking to change the plan in some way as a result of this submission, it would be prudent, I think, to look at Martins Bay situation as well, if not all other whitebait stands up to you, but specifically I represent the Big Bay group. The second thing I could perhaps just discuss is the fish and game submission, and that the Big Bay Whitebatters group is amenable to an additional permitted activity condition that ensures that public access is maintained. So that's additional to my original submission. Happy to include that, and that's outlined in this submission as well. Moving on to the section of the term practicable, perhaps I'd just like to dwell on that briefly. I've always looked at the term practicable in planning terms as that which can be practiced, as opposed to practical, which is actually in the earlier body of the plan. Practical sort of is kind of loose, doesn't quite, I mean, practical to whom? Whereas that which can be practiced is quite specific to a functioning whitebait stand. If you're going to relocate your stand, it has to be somewhere where it can function as a whitebait stand. So I see that as practicable, as opposed to what others may think is, you know, carte blanche. If it was a permitted activity, it would be preferred or convenient. That doesn't mean that at all. Moving on to the Section 42A officer's report, the report itself, I'd like to just go down to Section 3.3, where I've said here about my submission explains how Big Bay Whitebatters Group accepts that relocated stands should be relocated as close as practicable to original stands. Now, what happens if someone's whitebait stand is deactivated through a flood or the river changing course, is that all the other whitebaiters get together and put a stand up in the next tide. It's a quick operation, everyone gets together, it's a community there during the whitebait season. So the concept of having to get written permission from all other affected parties, it kind of happens anyway. It's a quick, it's an easy operation. The stands themselves are temporary, they're taken down at the end of the season, so they're moved around anyway. They're not permanent structures in that regard. So the activity is almost de minimis in terms of what's involved. And as I said, it's a community activity in terms of everyone helps each other at the time. So council involvement, you'd have to ask yourself, you know, is that really necessary given that the whole community is involved anyway?
Yeah.
In terms of practicality. Perhaps I am concerned, I have to say, about the report, that's the officer's report's interpretation of Policy 31. I don't think that the way that it's been interpreted, the officer's report, is correct. And I've outlined that in my submission. But just to elaborate on that briefly, the way I see Policy 31 is that it's not specifically there as a policy for allocating space for whitebait stands. The reason that policy is there, it's actually listed under activities that affect water quality and quantity. What I see there is that the activity of having a whitebait stand has no effect on all those issues relating to water quality, natural character, landscape, public access, etc. The only effect that it could have is this one with regards to spatial issues. So that's why Policy 31 mentions only spatial issues. You can't interpret it. You can't interpret the plan as saying, oh, well, it only mentions spatial issues, so that's all it refers to. Especially when it's listed under a heading that says activities that affect water quality and quantity. I hope you follow that line of reasoning, but I think that that's a more correct line of reasoning to take. So I disagree with the officer's report in that regard, and it's listed in my submission. Finally, and perhaps on a happier note, I'd just like to talk a bit about the value of this activity to wider native fish management, and in fact quite a lot of other things as well. It's immense, potentially. The value of this activity is such, those of you who may know a native fish scientist, Dr. Jacques Boubé, he's done a lot of work in the Waikato River on historic whitebait catches and whitebait stands in the Waikato. And they have catch records running right back to about the 1950s. And he's been looking at the effects of the Southern Oscillation, the La Nina, El Nino pattern on whitebait catches. And also, I think, eel catches, or elva catches in the Waikato as well. And he's starting to pick up patterns there. They're kind of vague, but they're patterns, and they're very important, because we can actually, if we can nail this one down, we can get an idea of just what the effect of the La Nina El Nino pattern is on native fish returns, and also the effect of changes through climate change on that. So it actually has a lot of value. The trouble with the Waikato data is that it's based on a modified river that's undergoing constant modifications, dammed, diverted, discharged into, and all sorts of things. So you don't know if those changes and catches are as a result of anthropogenic or man-made activities, or because of the Southern Oscillation. What he needs is a control area. It's an unmodified catchment which has long-term catch data for whitebaits. And Big Bay, Martin's Bay, and I've spoken to Jacques about this, and he says that would be perfect. That's exactly what I need. If we can get long-term historic data, or long-term data, annual accurate data from these areas, then I can use that as a control, and we can see if the patterns correlate between Waikato and Big Bay, Martin's Bay, and I can then say, okay, this pattern is actually a real pattern, not just something that's occurred as a result of man-induced activities. So what I'm trying to say here, and I hope it's outlined in my submission, is that these data that we're getting from Big Bay have a lot of value to native fish management, an awful lot of value. I don't believe that it's council's intention through its planning process to disrupt that value, but it potentially could disrupt that value. If we have a situation where we get a big flood, wipes all the whitebait stands out, we lose a year's data, that is a problem. That's a big problem. So I just wanted to emphasise that point, because I'm quite passionate about that sort of thing as an ecologist myself, and I've been working with Jacques on this, and Jacques getting, and I are both getting quite excited about the value of this, and we just don't want to see it fall over. So that's pretty much it.
No, that's very helpful. Thank you. You happy now if we proceed to
of
questions?
Course, yes.
Start at this end of the table, right?
Oh, thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chisholm. Is that speaker working? Is this thing working?
I can hear you, okay.
Okay. could you tell me how many stands there are on the Awara River at Big Bay?
Oh. I can get back to you with that, but I understand it's 12. It may be more, but I think it's 12.
Because I had a look on Google Images, and it looks like it's about that sort of number.
Sorry?
I had a look on the Google Earth Images, and it looks like it's about that sort of number.
Yeah, I can get back with it if it's all right.
Yep, that'd be helpful, thank you.
You talk about flooding on this Awara River. I noticed that there's quite a large lagoon upstream, and that the catchment is not that big. So we know West Coast rivers can flood, but is this really a very significant issue in this particular location?
I would, in terms of the term significant, I mean, one person's significance is another person's non-significance, so it's a subjective question, so I'll answer it this way. Probably not that significant, but the area itself, the morphology of the area is such that it could be. And the reason for that is that the lower Awara River is pretty much sand dunes. It's a sandy base.
Yeah.
So its ability to wash away is quite high, potentially, although that doesn't happen very often. In particular, at the very lower end of the Awara River, the bottom end whitebait stands, there's two or three at the bottom end. That area does move around quite a bit. And there have been instances, one or two instances in the last 5 years where those stands have actually been left high and dry as a result of the river changing course. And it's recently changed course again, outside the season, fortunately, but it means that one of the stands will have to be rebuilt come this next season. So it's not a major issue, but it is an issue. And potentially it could be a major issue given the sandy substrate that the white bass stands are actually sitting on. Another thing about the upper catchment is that although there is a lagoon there and that does modify the flooding events there, it's a very high rainfall area. And the Awarua River, it's called the Dry Awarua River, which runs into that lagoon, that's a very flashy, very floody sort of a catchment. I've had circumstances where I've had to run along the track to get across there before. It's a flash flood. It floods very quickly. But I couldn't say more than that. There's really been no work done on the nature of that catchment and how it behaves.
Last question. How reliable do you really think that data from whitebaiters is?
I think it's very reliable. The problem I have with it is getting it off the fishermen. They don't like to give it out. This process doesn't help that. I've been trying for the last 5 years to tease it out of them, and they see me in some ways as sort of the arch bureaucrat trying to sort of find out what they're up to. And I'm still working on that, but from what I've been told of it, we may have records from Big Bay back to the 1960s. If that's the case, and I'd say accurate records, because one individual in particular at the end of the season goes around all the other whitebait stands and gets their catch records, because it's commercial stands there, so the catches are logged. So it gets all of the information from all of the stands, and that's been going on for many, many years. It's just trying to get that information out of them is quite difficult. I've got the last 5 years, but I do believe it to be accurate. And I've spoken to Jacques Boubet about that, Dr. Boubet, and he's very happy with the information that he's been provided so far.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chisholm. The whitebaiters that are there, you would describe them principally as kind of commercial operators or those that are domestic, or what would be a profile of those people that operate in the area?
I'm glad you asked that question. Entirely commercial, but the profile of the whitebaiter there is typically a retired person who's over there supplementing their income, their pension income. So they'll take 3 months out of the year to go over there and catch their whitebait, sell their whitebait, and that tops up their super, you might say. One or two others there are sort of guy who does a bit of fencing and a bit of shearing, and then he does a bit of whitebaiting. So that kind of person as well, man of the land, you might say. So those are the two kinds of people you get there. They're not people who are there recreationally as such. The money that they get from that is important to them.
So the tenure that a family or an individual, is it intergenerational? What would be sort of an average tenure process, either with an individual or with a family on the stands?
Approximately. Well,
give me a feeling for that, if you wouldn't mind.
They appear to be family owned, certainly, and owned for a long time. Perhaps like an entire generation, and are passed on through generations. Occasionally they're sold, but by occasionally there may be one for sale every, say, 5 years. What else was I going to say about that? Quite a lot of the whitebait stands are shared between families. So perhaps two, maybe sometimes three individuals or family trusts will have an ownership right in a whitebait stand. One in particular that I know of, the chap who has operated it for some time, is now basically too old to go there anymore. So he effectively has a friend who goes and does it for him. So it's kind of like that. It's a
thank you.
Family, I guess. Yeah.
Any questions?
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chisholm.
Good morning.
You said that the stands are taken down each season entirely. is that?
Yes, the large steel framed things, it's hard to describe here, I'd have to show you, but there's very large steel frames and they're pulled out of the water at the end of the year. They're left in on site, they're not taken away completely, so the steel frames are taken out of the water at the end of the season, I should say, and they sit there until the season starts and they're put back in. They're staked in the bed of the river.
So your concern seems to be related to if there's a flood event or some issue like that causing the change of the river course leading up to the start of the season. Yes. Can you explain it's the inability to get a consent in that
yes.
situation where you need to relocate?
Yes, it's the requirement to get a consent if you have to relocate your stand. There's actually three events that could have an effect on this. Strangely enough, there have been tsunamis at Big Bay. Not big ones, but they do occur. I don't think that's ever been a problem with whitebait stands, but potentially it could be. So that's a very, very unlikely event, but still there. The second is a big flood that wipes out all stands. And again, apparently there have been big floods outside the season that potentially could have done that, but we haven't actually experienced that during the season, thankfully. And the third, it's been an uncommon event as well, the third and most likely event, and as I explained before, that has occurred is where the river changes course, especially at the very bottom. And that is a common event.
Are any of the stands currently subject to a resource consent?
All of them are consented, yes.
And despite you, I understand what you were saying about policy 31, possibly appearing to be not related to water quality and quant, but it is restricted. Do you agree that it has the intent of being restricted?
Well, the way I read it, get back to it again, restrict the allocation of space, yeah, for whitebait stands. Yes, exactly, and that restriction is through the consent process. But we're submitting that the consent process should make allowance to permit the activity status for relocation, as far as practicable.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
What are you
further questions? Yes, I'm not totally. My understanding of a stand is what I see down there around a number of sites, and you're talking about something that is mobile, so I think we're probably talking about slightly different things. I see a structure which I understand South and District Council give a consent for. There is an approach onto marine area which Environment Southland gives an approach for. That is governed by the Southern Regional Marine Framework or policy. I think that it's quite interacted there. So I think the restricted discretion refers to actually moving a site to a different place, not rebuilding or maintaining on the existing site.
Yes, that's
correct. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
So you're suggesting that if the river moves, that the GPS placement for that stand is now unable to be done and it needs to be in a different place.
Yes, that's right.
So effectively you're saying you're going to go back to the forge on the same site, not move along the channel. Is that correct?
Well, it may be moving along the channel, but there are constraints in that. You can't be within 20 metres of another stand, for example. So if you've got, let's say, 12 stands, I think it's 12, on the river, you can't encroach on another stand. You're pretty much tied in between the two stands anyway. If you're between two stands anyway, you're constrained by the location of the other stands. But yes, you would be moving the stand up or down the river, especially for the last stand at the bottom. This is the one that is most affected by this policy, is the very last stand at the bottom where the river does move around quite a bit. The chap there would have the ability under the permitted activity status to move his stand from 20 metres of the next stand up down to probably what would be mean high water spring, because you wouldn't go any lower than that. So that would give him a little bit more flexibility. But again, there's quite a lot of constraints on this. But the situation is that under the current plan, the way the plan is worded, that if you rebuild your stand and it's a couple of metres from the original location, you've got to go through this process. And it's, well, it's kind of silly in a way, to me anyway, it seems a bit silly.
All right, thank you. I've just got four questions briefly for you. You mentioned that the stands are removed at the end of each season. Is that the same process region-wide, do you know?
I couldn't say, I don't know, so.
And from what you've said in the answer to the questions, it seems to me the issue is replacement of a stand during the season. So if something happens to a stand during the season?
Or at the start of the season. I mean, a restricted discretionary activity, yep. The process of getting one can take a while, depending on the nature of the application and so forth. So, for example, if a stand or stands got washed away in July, you could still be waiting.
Yeah. It seems to me there's also Rule 65A, which says to use the stand as a controlled activity.
Yes.
So you need a consent to use the stand. So if we were to agree with your submission to make replacement stands permitted, we'd also need to roll into Rule A, the use of those replacement stands would have to be permitted as well, wouldn't it? You wouldn't want to have to come along and get a consent to use your replacement stand.
I expect so, yes.
So you'd
yes.
agree with that? Okay. And in terms of replacement stands, you mentioned they might move up and down the river. I imagine if someone wanted to move their stand too far up and down the river, there'd be an element of self-policing of?
Absolutely. And I think that's the crux of my argument.
It's an understatement.
To be honest.
All right, thank you very much. The point you've made is very clear, and we'll give them serious consideration, and thank you for the time
you've taken
to present your case to us.
Cheers.
Thank you.